now. What is looking at me like
an
Captain
iPhone,
Phillips?
An iPhone.
It's not even a 15. It's a 6. It's an iPhone 6. Her laptop is like a 2012.
I don't know what it says about me that it actually hurts that you said that.
Does it hurt?
Oh, Lord. Anyway, so back to torture.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about torture. I forgot about torture. I keep bringing in such bright things and then you keep...
Like, I keep telling you...
Beating it down.
I keep telling you there's too much levity and then you just ignore my advice. So now when we get back to torture, it's a bit of a whiplash.
With the levity, I will now have some brevity.
Introducing Nyayo House. Nana Thiong'o, the law student we had talked about earlier, the one who got expelled for standing at a protest and showing mild interest, he described Nyayo House as a total nightmare. Kamau Munene, a journalist with a Kenyan news agency in Kirinyaga district, described it as an endless journey of torture.
Wow.
Maurice Adongo Ogni, then a lecturer at Mombasa Polytechnic, described Nyayo House as a place of discoveries. I made a few interesting and sometimes painful discoveries in that joint.
So he spent some time there.
He spent some time there.
All right.
Because I don't also feel comfortable making content out of their stories because it just feels like gross.
You have another one for me to read?
I do. I do. But let's run through the basics.
All right.
As we said, the basement was torture. 25th or 26th floor was questioning and interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
And the patterns of torture were either psychological or physical.
Those are the only two patterns you can have.
Would you like to do this?
I'm sorry. I'm just being the good sidekick.
Good
sidekick.
Okay, so for psychological, you have silence, intimidation, and the one that I think is the most fucked up, which is denial of human contact. Because you'd basically be alone all the time and no one would talk to you.
Experiencing only your thoughts.
And other people screaming.
Yo, you can hear them.
Because you're in the basement with them.
Mm-hmm.
There are holding cells down there.
Ugh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then also disorientation, because they'd often bind your hands and cover your eyes and ears while they're moving from place to place.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell you what day it is, what year it is, what month it is.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell you if it's light or dark out.
Mm-hmm.
They just fuck with your ability to know when time is passing.
Yeah.
Which just fucks with your head even more.
Absolutely.
Which is not great.
Mm-hmm.
And then for physical, you have the standards, beatings, dehydration,
standards.
Hunger, lack of sanitation, sexual assault was the
what
one that
mean?
Was like...
To the men?
To me. Yes, we'll talk about it. You'll actually read some. It's very... And then we've also talked about the swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
So first we're going to talk about Njeru Kadangu. He was the former senior officer for the army and a member of parliament. And when I was reading the story of how they tried to break him, I had a visceral just no to everything they did. So after days of no food and no water, days of no human contact, and days of physical abuse, and at one time they froze his body. They then tried something new.
You mean froze his body?
As in put him in the swimming pool.
Okay.
And they just froze his body. His body got too cold to heat himself, so he was just cold in the inside, cold on the outside, surrounded by cold water with hot air above you. You are going to get sick.
Okay.
Yes, and that's what they did to him for days.
Mm-hmm.
So now after they that did not break him, so his torturers, two men called James Opio and a man called Mr. Machiri, left.
Mm-hmm.
And now I want you to read what happens next.
Okay. Let me make sure I find it this time.
Yeah, because there's no time for levity in this one.
So it's this...
A brown.
A brown, okay. Okay. A brown woman with a Kikuyu accent came to me and said, "Kadangu, you have not eaten. Why should you torture yourself? You have a wife and children, and here you are protecting people who cannot assist you." I asked her, "Who are you?" "A policewoman." "It does not matter," she replied. "I want to assist you." She started fondling me everywhere and telling me that she could assist me in getting out of the place if I only confessed to having been misled to overthrow the government. She continued fondling me until I pushed her away. She raised the alarm and Opio came back. He gave me a blow up my head and I fell down. He beat me with a wooden chair leg and rubber whip until I could no longer stand. He then summoned some people who came and dragged me downstairs. Hey, hey, hey. So the sexual abuse was by women, police officers. Like, what was her intent? Was she going to go through with something?
I just, it's a very complicated discussion, right? Because somehow, I think she was, because maybe that's her job. And like you said at the very beginning of this, when we started, that like when you're trying to torture somebody, that's your job. You have to disassociate.
Yeah.
It just has to be your job. So I think she was doing what she thought she needed to do to protect the Republic. So I think, yeah, I think she might have been prepared to go through with it. We don't know.
Oh, man.
But she could, but remember, she could have always called the guards.
Yeah.
So she never had to go through with it.
But she only called them when he got aggressive.
And she could have also called them before he finished.
Mm-hmm.
Like, either way, the guards are always there and they're on her side.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, and I don't know if it's just me, but like, it feels worse that it's a woman. And I understand why it feels worse, but it just feels grosser that it's a woman that's doing the sexual assault.
I mean,
I get why.
Sexual assault is sexual assault. But yeah, I get what you mean. I mean, if I was the guy being tortured, it would definitely feel worse if it was a man. But I get what you're saying.
I mean, I also feel like what she said before she started fondling him, the you have a wife and child thing, and then you start fondling him was very...
A child, and yet you're letting these people around assisting you. What are they helping you with? So they tried force, and they tried
isolation,
pain and isolation. So then they're now using seduction. Clearly the Kenyan government struggles with the art of seduction.
Was that a joke on purpose?
No, it's true. As in, that was like she tried to seduce him, but she tried terribly. Like she didn't do very well.
I don't know, because like seduction is very dependent upon the
circumstance
person,
as well,
right?
Yeah, and also can't be torturing someone and being like, okay, now let me seduce you.
I mean, at that point, you're going from emotional extreme to emotional extreme, and you might just be very happy to have a break, like some kind of reprieve,
relief. Yeah,
yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I can't. I've never been tortured, so I can't speak to it. But like, yo. Anyway, moving on. We have Kamau Munene. Are you ready to read?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I like reading.
Here you go. The bullet point is very easy this time.
I got it. My torturers would remove the blindfold, strip me naked, and handcuff me before starting their game. You dog, who are you compared to 23 million Kenyans? Even if you die, you are just a bitch. Mashiri and Opio, who I came to know later, would shout at me while whipping me repeatedly. In total, there were 7 torturers who were armed with machine guns, batons, and whips. 2 would work on me until they got tired. A woman torturer would mainly be interested in working on my sex organ, which she would pierce with a sharp needle, burn the tip and testicles with a smoldering cigarette, while a man held my legs apart. This would continue for several hours every day until I passed out. Sorry.
I'll just let you
go. She would pierce my sex organ with a sharp needle, then burn the tip and testicles with a smoldering cigarette while his legs were being held apart, and then do that for many hours in the day. Until the guy basically blacks out.
See, here's a thing that I feel like a lot of people don't know or don't like to know. And that's the human body can withstand a lot of pain. It's designed to take a lot of pain. Because that's how you learn. That's
for ourselves.
That's
I
how
mean,
you evolve.
Yeah.
Pain.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That one was rough.
Yeah. Sorry, I was laughing because number one, life... Like watching you react to it is just very entertaining. And number two, I think I read it so many times that I just became very desensitized to what I was reading. Because after a while, it just become words.
Yeah, it's true.
But like,
it's ridiculous.
It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot to... Also creative, I'm not going to lie, but also a lot.
It's madness. So, yeah. I think you have... As we spoke earlier, mm-hmm. you actually have to have a bit of a...
Something.
Weird brain to be able to do some of these things.
Because I don't know if it's just you, but like the human body is also very, very reluctant to hurt another person.
Mm-mm.
Like I remember reading somewhere that in World War II, when the US Army was trying to train its soldiers, a lot of them were struggling to shoot directly at the targets because they didn't want to kill people.
Yeah.
So they were shooting above the head,
mm-hmm.
In the gaps, just trying to make sure that, like, hey, get out the
it's
way.
It's a warning.
Right? But then they had to teach them to shoot straight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, you know, they ended up becoming, you know, the US Army. But like, to be able to do this every single day, and then, like, do you think the people that were doing this were broken by this?
I don't know. Maybe, yeah. They had to have been broken to an extent. Maybe they were just a bit of psychopaths, or they had disconnected themselves, because it seems like for these two characters... They experienced the same three guns. Opio, Mashiri.
Yeah, Mashiri, and then the lady.
And the lady. And so it's clear that there had to have been something there, yeah?
So it's a good thing we've talked about the lady, because she was also a part of the psychological torture that
mm-hmm.
they would inflict upon the prisoners. And because all the survivors narrate how they heard mysterious noises of a lady walking in high heels around the cell, just... And then they would also hear noises of pulling and pushing of furniture,
mm-hmm.
the shuffling of papers,
mm.
and the cries of small children. So, like, if you're a father there, you don't know if they have your
child.
All you're hearing is a child crying,
mm-hmm.
and now you're like, "Fuck,
wah,"
right?
Okay.
But here's like another similarity I saw when I was reading through the reports,
mm-hmm.
and it's that none of these guys broke.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Is that none of these guys broke.
Mm-mm. Well, at least they said they didn't break.
At least they say they didn't break.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the ones, the stories that they chose to include were
only
those the ones.
Who didn't break.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure a few must have broken.
Can you imagine enduring this for years?
I mean, I'd break like a chopstick.
I thought you'd say like a twig. Or like a Kit Kat.
I'm giving myself a little more, like a chopstick.
Even more
start to do a little this. Okay. Okay, what do you want to know? Where is Aileen? Aileen is at this location at this point at this time. Go at this point.
You'd sell me out so quickly.
I'd sell my children out. I'm kidding. Relax. I don't know. But do you know how incredibly terrible torture is?
I think we're starting to get a picture.
Because you hear of people like getting... I've never understood how you can get to the point where you can actually beg the torturer to actually end your life.
Just kill you. Just let it.
Rather than continue this process.
Because if this is your everyday reality,
mm-hmm.
your only guarantee is pain and suffering and misery and just
mm-hmm.
unknowable amounts of anger that you can never act upon.
Yeah.
Is that a life worth living?
It's a really hard decision to make. And the thing with this Nyayo torture chain is it wasn't just people we do not know today. It was also really big people who experienced a lot. Yeah, the rumors of what Raila experienced... Rumors of what people like Kenneth Matiba experienced as well. Who, I don't know if he ever was in the Nyayo torture chambers, but he was tortured for sure, till the point he had to be taken to the UK, because they realized, this one cannot die.
Yeah, this one.
You know, that's the weird thing. Like, you torture characters, but you know there's some who you know cannot die.
Yes.
So, you know, Matiba, his movement is too big. He dies, revolution.
Yes.
So, take him to the UK, give him the best treatment, but he comes back half the man he was.
Yes.
Really sad.
Because it changes you, and I think that's the point. That's why I made the distinction between torturing for, like, a quote-unquote noble end,
mm-hmm.
and then torturing for torture's sake,
mm.
where the goal is torture, and what torture means
and
for that person.
What would you say the Nyaya Chumbas were about?
It was torture for torture's sake.
Was it?
Because I firmly believe that these guys knew that the Mwakenya movement, the thing that spurred these whole, like, arrest things,
I think
it wasn't as big as they...
It wasn't big enough to...
Because think you're the Moi government in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I have the benefit of hindsight, but even you, as the president of a republic...
Think of it from the perspective of a security apparatus who has said never again. Will even an attempt on a government takeover happen? And so even these small people were not taking advantage.
But that's the thing, like, you can only notice that level of paranoia when you're not in it. Because think about what you're saying. Then every single person, including every single person you work with, all of your family members, even the president himself, is suspect.
Yeah.
No one is safe.
Mm-mm.
Is that an environment you yourself want to live in?
Not an issue of want. But yeah, it's an issue. It's an environment you do live in.
So I do think it was torture for torture's sake. I do think the point was never... Because I often wondered, like, why is it that Moi wasn't accused of killing more people?
Because
as a dictator, that's what you do. You kill your enemies.
He actually didn't kill many,
Yeah. And then somebody explained to me, he's like, no, he didn't need to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
He just scared the living shit out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then let the rest follow take care of itself.
Yeah.
And see, Ryan ran away. Well, not ran away. He, like, left for very legitimate reasons.
People
left. I apologize, I framed it that way.
Many of those people, Anyang Nyong'o, who's one of the greatest minds this country has had, he left.
For legitimate reasons.
Went to Mexico.
Reasons.
That's why Lupita Nyong'o is considered a Kenyan-Mexican.
Which is a very interesting combination.
Mm-hmm. And why she can speak fluent Spanish is because she spent a lot of part of her life
in Mexico.
In Mexico. So it did change the Moi government. I think you're right. The Moi government, we've never been able to really openly discuss the experiences that many people had during that time. The people who were tortured, the people who were forced to run away, the people who were forced to hide their ambitions, the businessmen who destroyed their businesses were destroyed by the regime.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, maybe there has to be more discussions about that. Maybe the nation's not ready.
I really thought that time would happen when he died.
Oh, never, never. We're Africans.
No, it's not about being African as much as it is just realizing that this man who was a literal ghost and terror, the literal embodiment of the shadow of the Republic, the man who we will scapegoat for all our sins, had died.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we spent the next, even now, like the next 3 years, saying nothing but positive things about him.
A leader, even a bad leader, but a leader who has led your country deserves respect. I believe a little bit. Number two, maybe it's also in my nature that when someone passes away, you give them their flowers and you say whatever was bad about them.
But that's not an honest reflection
move on.
Of their life.
It's true, it's not. But we also can't forget that he did do some good things.
He did.
In 2002, even though he was pressurized, like and the knife was to his neck, he did hand over power, which was a big, big thing for our nation.
Except
there are some countries, think of it this way. Paul Biya of Cameroon is 91, has been president since the 70s, 40 plus years. Teodoro Nguesso Nguema,
Equatorial
Guinea, 39 or 38 years.
With the infamous Black Beach prison at his side.
You go. Yoweri Museveni of Uganda from 1986 till today. How many years is that? That's 3 years from 40.
I also think, like, perhaps in Botswana, like, the current president or the presidents tended to come from the same royal line.
Apart from this one.
Yes, yeah, so you
so
have
it used to be the Kamas,
the
Mamas.
The Kamas.
But this one, the new one is not a Kama.
Which is interesting.
His word is not new, he's been there for like 4 or 5 years. So look at those countries that had presidents who, even with the knife at their back, you know, you could use also Mugabe as well, who had, even with the knife at their back, to step aside, never did. So you give him his props, he stepped aside.
But like, the bar is so low.
That's a low bar, but
it's such a low bar.
There are many people who failed that bar.
No, but it's such a... We should not be celebrating him for doing the thing that he should have done.
He did an important... He's played an important role in our history.
It's like, what's it called?
It's not to celebrate it, but to acknowledge...
It's like celebrating your boyfriend for remembering your birthday. Like, no.
Yeah.
That's such a low bar.
No.
You deserve better.
He remembered. You're important to him. You have to acknowledge.
No.
It's not even... It's not to celebrate it. But to acknowledge it, we're not celebrating him. We're not celebrating that time. We're acknowledging that that was an important time in our history. We also acknowledge that, yeah, he did some things for education. Education is the way it is because of what Moi did in the 80s and the 90s. The Nyayo Milk Program. Those are things you say, okay, yeah. I mean, the guy had a terrible... I mean, in terms of politics, he was an evil genius.
And corruption.
As we say, the greatest we've ever had. in terms of politician, political mind. And yes, he did evil things with corruption, he did evil things with the torture, but he also did some things that were not that bad. My opinion.
Okay.
But yes, okay, so, of the five, he is the fifth, so please relax to me.
No, okay, so let's take a step back and stop discussing the perpetrator. Let's talk about the survivors for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do we as Kenyans owe them anything? And if so, what do we owe them?
Wow.
I know, right?
Do we owe them anything? I mean, you don't need it to be a situation in which they're each getting like 500 bob.
I mean,
sometimes it's so rough, so political. I think what they're owed is something a state can hardly give. Public apology. They're owed a public apology, and they're owed a remembrance, an acknowledgement of their past and their pain. Get those two. Fiscally, you can give the money, you can't. But I think for nation building, for healing, public apology from the government. And you know what? In my opinion, great PR. As a president, it's been 30 years, 40 years, no one cares anymore. Just come and say, you know what, as a nation, we are sorry. Nation building is important to us. I mean, great PR, great.
First of all, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, you're right. States don't apologize.
They don't.
States can't apologize.
I mean, as a bit of a digression, you saw how much hate Obama got when he bowed his head to the Japanese. He didn't even like... He just bowed his head, and they were like, a president, an American president should never bow his head.
But like, you dropped a nuclear bomb into
killed,
his country.
And they never have apologized.
Like, do you know how fucked up that is?
How many
is?
People was it? Like, we watched Oppenheimer. No, it was like 200,000 people.
Oh, yes.
It's like 200,000 people.
But still, it was a lot. And then you saw the people who got radiation poisoning, who got cancer, their offspring, children.
You imagine that? And they still didn't apologize.
Or another example would be how reluctant the British have been to so much as even utter the words acknowledge and apologize
for reference colonialism.
To anything to do with its colonial history.
The only thing they'll acknowledge and apologize for is slavery, but because they're only involved in the trade, they weren't really involved in the...
Setting up the infrastructure. No, they did that too.
The infrastructure, but you know, the publicly the sin of slavery... is with the Americans.
Oh, yeah, the Americans did.
But the British did hell of a lot, didn't they?
They did, and I think the most you will ever hear them say is, we regret what we did.
They will never say, we were wrong for what we did. They will never say that when we look back at history and talk of the British Empire,
we
want to back the British Empire.
They know exactly what
you
they
are
mean.
Talking about an empire that suppressed African nations, Asian nations,
the Native Americans.
I mean, the history of blood that follows them. I mean, can only be shared with the Americans and the French.
And the Spanish, don't
and
forget.
The Spanish.
And the Dutch.
The Dutch. And the Germans.
Oh, the Germans.
I mean,
so basically, like Western Europe.
Yeah, and America over there.
And also Russia. Russia did some fucked up things.
Russia did bad things.
Oh, and the Turkish.
The only difference
and
with
the
Russians. The only difference with the Russians and a bit of the Chinese, but the Russians in particular, is like, you see, the West did it to others, for the most part, especially
the Russians, it was to us.
Like, they killed millions of themselves.
No, I mean, I feel like Eastern Europeans would beg to differ that they were Russian.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, they would have some words to say about it.
Oh, yeah, that's
but
true.
But like, that's the point. Like, even for example, like, Kenya will never apologize to, you know, the northern part of its territory for what they've done to it since the beginning of its history. They will never apologize to Somali citizens, Somali Kenyans, for how they've treated them.
Say hello to Gabriel's feet.
Like, they will never apologize.
Never.
So... How, I mean, this is a bit of a loaded question, because even the way I'm phrasing it is bullshit, right? But like, how can we expect an apology if we ourselves are not willing to give one and understand the reasons why one can never be given?
I think that's a philosophical question I can't answer, but as a country and as a people globally have to ask themselves that question. Why can't we not just, and I think in many countries, the people themselves are probably willing to say those words, but because of what it does to power dynamics and what it entails in terms of reparations and all those things, the states cannot allow it.
So, like, here's the thing. It reminds me of, you know, in criminal law dramas,
mm-hmm.
and you're brought in and you get an attorney, and the first thing they tell you is don't say anything,
mm-hmm.
don't admit to anything, do not confess, keep quiet.
Keep quiet. Because what you say and what you do has repercussions on our international policy.
But here's the thing. But look at what happens when you try to do the right thing. Like with what Germany did with
mm-hmm.
with its, I guess, remembrance program.
It's past.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's been trying to figure out its relationship with its own history.
Mm.
Like, yes, it's still dealing with, like, the neo-Nazi problem because, you know, Nazis are kind of
mm-hmm.
forever at this point for some fucking reason.
Mm-hmm.
But because they were so careful about preserving the truth of history,
mm.
preserving not only the horrors that the Nazis inflicted, but what those horrors meant for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a part of that history. Like, it's something that everyone learns.
I mean, we should definitely learn from the Germans.
What?
We should definitely, if you listen to how they have actually acknowledged.
Even this whole Namibia genocide thing.
They apologized.
They apologized.
Yeah.
Like, it took a while. They should have done it a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the bar is so fucking low. But they apologized.
No, the Germans, by the way, have treated how to hold your past, I think, the best out of any Western nation. All the other countries, some of them haven't. You did a whole podcast on what the U.S. did in Haiti.
They refused to acknowledge.
They can't acknowledge it.
And it's even funny.
I mean, I'm watching a show right now called Spy Ops. And it's talking about what they did in Panama. And they're sort of talking about it as, like, this historic thing we needed to do for our own selves and our own preservation. But if you read, I mean, I advise everyone to read a book called The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Mm-hmm.
And read about what they did in Panama, Chile. There was another country.
Was it Philippines?
Philippines, but I'm talking about the Latin American countries. Mm-hmm. There are like three or four of them.
Okay.
Where they meddled into the business to ensure themselves, their own interests are protected. They removed presidents because they were communists.
Yes.
I mean, we were just right now during the break, during our break, we were talking about this book, The 21 Speeches That Shaped the World. And I was showing you a line where Henry Kissinger literally said, with regards to a president that they loved called Salvador Allende, he basically said that the Chileans are too stupid to have democracy.
He was like, if the Chileans are going to be stupid enough to let their country fall to communists,
mm-hmm.
then we have to step in and do something.
Yeah.
For the sake of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that level of arrogance is quite truly astounding.
Can you imagine
that? Astounding.
That's the world that was there. It's horrendous. Really bad.
So?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you believe that if we owe anything to the survivors, it's a public apology and recognition.
And recognition of their suffering.
By who?
The state.
By the state or by the Moy family?
By the state.
Why the state?
The actions were by the state.
Okay.
And even if it was by the Moy family, whatever, it was by the state. The Moy family, you can't, and this is my deep belief, you can never blame the child for the sins of his father. Sorry. How can a family apologize for something that they had no idea was going on?
Are you sure they had no idea?
Yes, for the most part, yes.
Do you think they were getting involved?
Do you think they were getting involved in the torture?
No, I don't think they were getting involved. They were too smart for that.
These African parents
need to know what's going on.
They had a way of separation. I don't think they knew exactly what was going on. So for me, you need a public apology from the state. And you need to release those documents, all those interesting secrets about the past, so that we can read them for our curiosity's sake. And let us acknowledge what history is.
Do you think a public apology will be enough? Because, like, real substantive
nothing
physical
is enough.
Harm has been done that, you know,
nothing
affects
is enough.
Their quality of life today.
Nothing is enough.
So maybe, I mean, if I was to add on to your plan, it would be a public apology and a sort of, like,
mm-hmm.
fund,
mm-hmm.
remuneration fund or something.
I mean, it's nice, but even that wouldn't be enough. I believe that they need two things, a state apology and an acknowledgement
mm-hmm.
of the history that they experienced. They need to hear, they need people to hear, and the state to openly admit to the things these people went through. If there are state papers that wrote about this, they need to be released. Let these people at least be validated
mm-hmm.
in the past and the pain they experienced. I think that is the most they can get, unfortunately.
Okay. So if indeed, you know, somebody in government was to say, fine, we will apologize, we will acknowledge what was done in the name of the Kenyan people and at the hands of the Kenyan government, who should give that apology?
The state. So the president of the Republic of Kenya.
Why not Moi and his family? Like, why don't you want some sort of, like, acknowledgement?
Why not?
His bloodline that, like, he is sorry, or that he knew, or that, I don't know, something.
Why not Moi and his family? Number one, because Moi is not alive. Probably that's a family. Big issue. Number two, because I don't believe that the sins of the father changed to the son. I don't believe these kids were like, oh, dad is torturing people. In fact, probably they thought their father was a hero. It's true. Even the people who you consider evil, if you listen to their children, you'll get a different story.
No, I do listen to their children. It's also just that, like, at a certain point...
Because their children experience them in a different way.
No, but at a certain point, you also acknowledge the person. At some point, you do realize that...
No, you don't.
What you see your parents as are not how the world sees them.
You see them. You see your parents in a very different light. And so what they tell you and the stories they tell you is what comes to mind. So when people tell you about what they've done, you see it more of an attack or people not understanding the sacrifices your dad did rather than that your dad did bad things. So I would say it would mean nothing, in my opinion, for the Mois to stand on a microphone and say, we apologize. Because they do not represent what is in the mind of the late Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi. Does he apologize? Does he feel apologetic?
But okay,
we will never know.
How can
they apologize on his behalf? It means nothing. It doesn't mean he meant it.
What if the public apology is meant to serve two purposes, right?
Mm-hmm.
When provided by the state, it is supposed to be a public acknowledgement of the harm they have undergone and a recognition that, yeah, it was fucked up.
Mm.
And we regret it and we are going to make steps to redress it.
Yeah.
So, like, that's purpose one.
Mm-hmm.
But purpose two for the Moi family would be humiliation. Such that for the rest of time, this torture and this history will be inextricably tied to that last name.
Can I give you my opinion?
Yes.
Humiliation never works. Never works.
World War II is a good example of that, actually.
Think of also just the history of the Mois themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And how we almost lost, and people don't talk about this that much, 2002, the attempt to humiliate Moi could have caused a really big problem if Moi didn't turn
the other cheek.
Well, I'm not going to call Moi the guy who turned the other cheek, but if he didn't turn his head and just say, it's fine. Probably he was singing like Anna Kendrick in his head. He was like, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone. And had he not, and had he told his people to fight back for him, where would we have been? I think humiliation, though it sounds nice, serves no purpose but causing other people to be hurt and then causing further conflict between people. So I don't think humiliation works. I don't think putting the Mois out there. Already they've been humiliated many times. Putting them out there and saying, bad people, shame. Like Cersei from Game of Thrones.
Walking naked through
the tracks. Serves no purpose.
Oh no, it made her.
But to galvanize a political base.
No, I feel like that was a straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, that's the time she realized her son can die also.
She was like, oh no, it's fine, fuck it, fuck this. No, I'm done.
I don't believe the shame tactic will work. My thinking is the state must take the responsibility, must release the documentation, must release the history, let people expose themselves to it. I know our museums are very good at telling us what we're exposed to colonial, but I think it's time they tell us what we're exposed to
post.
And I know it affects the history of our most loved leaders, but the truth has to be told.
Well, rather than the usual outro of like me thanking you for listening and reminding you that you're awesome and telling you where we can connect, I thought I would chime in and say thank you so much for bearing with me and the chaotic nature of this creative process. It was not easy. The files were damaged. They were corrupt. My computer just said fuck it at some point. but it's okay. We did something. And this is the result. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for just vibing with us. Thank you so much for enjoying. I hope you enjoyed. And once again, thank you so much for supporting and like for being with us at the very bottom of, you know, like, you know, Sada from the bottom now here. Hey. I literally cannot thank you enough. If you want to connect with me, feel free to do it on Instagram, YouTube. If you can find my email address, please do not email me. I may not respond, but I am available on Instagram and YouTube. Once again, thank you so much. Make good choices and, you know, be selfish once in a while. You deserve it. Okay, bye.